July 27th, 2016, in Sima Chalam, Germany. And we're going to be reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 36. Dutam chalayatam asmi, tejas tejasvinam maham, jayasmi vyavayasasmi, sattvam sattvavatam maham. Are you translating for people?
I'm translating to check.
For who?
Whoever is available here and somebody.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. I am also the gambling of cheats, and of the splendid I am the splendor. I am victory, I am adventure, I am the strength of the strong. Purport. There are many kinds of cheaters all over the universe. Of all cheating processes, gambling stands supreme and therefore represents Krishna. As a supreme, Krishna can be more deceitful than any mere man. If Krishna chooses to deceive a person, no one can surpass him in his deceit. His greatness is not simply one-sided, it is all-sided.
10:36.
Among the victorious, he is victory. He is the splendor of the splendid. Among the enterprising and industrious, he is the most enterprising, the most industrious. Among adventurers, he is the most adventurous, and among the strong, he is the strongest. When Krishna was present on earth, no one could surpass him in strength. Even in his childhood, he lifted Govardhan Hill. No one can surpass him in cheating. No one can surpass him in splendor. No one can surpass him in victory. No one can surpass him in enterprise. And no one can surpass him in strength. Jutam chalayatam asmi, tejas tejasvinam maham, jayasmi vyavasayasmi, sattvam sattvavatam aham. I am also the gambling of cheats, and of the splendid I am the splendor. I am victory, I am adventure, and I am the strength of the strong. So everybody likes victory, right? Nobody likes to lose. And that sense we have, right? When you're in some kind of competition and you're victorious, that sense of victory, so that's Krishna. Now that's not only in competition with others, but also whenever we're trying to accomplish something on our own. Right? We have some project and we finally achieve it, and you get that sense of victory and celebration. So that's Krishna. And adventure. So of course, Krishna's leelas are a never-ending adventure. Just like Krishna and Krishna's cowherd boys go into the mouth of Agasura, that's quite an adventure. And the demon Vyomasura carries off the cowherd boys, and Krishna saves them. That's quite an adventure. So Krishna is always engaged in various adventure. But what do we mean by adventure? We mean doing something that's a little risky, right? Doing something that maybe is a little dangerous, that's a little uncertain. So Krishna says, I am adventure. Sometimes we think that when we take up Krishna consciousness, it means that everything's just going to go smoothly without any difficulty. But Krishna is also adventure. Part of the way that we can become peaceful in this world is to join Krishna's adventure, to be open to the interesting things that Krishna takes us to. Are you translating into what language? Czech. But he's translating into Czech. So there's no. All right, but you could just sit here, so you don't need to have two Czech translators. That's not necessary. Okay. So one of the ways that we're peaceful is knowing that Krishna is in charge. Another way we're peaceful is knowing that Krishna is our best friend, that the person who's in charge cares about us and knows what he's doing, right? As Krishna says, Bhaktiram Yagatapasam, Sarva Loka Maheshram, Suridam, Sarva Bhutanam, Gyatramam, Shanti Michiti. I'm in charge of everything, and I'm your best friend. But you can say, well, even if Krishna's in charge of everything, and even if he's our best friend, Still, things may not work out exactly the way we would like. But knowing that Krishna is adventure also helps us be peaceful. Because even if everything doesn't work out exactly the way we had in our mind, we can have fun going on Krishna's adventure. Of the splendid, I am the splendor. One of the 12 rasas is Adbhuta rasa. Splendid, the wondrous, the majestic. Of course, Nisangadeva definitely exhibits part of this Adbhuta rasa. Amazing, splendorous form coming out of the pillar. And we all like splendid things. The beautiful sunrise and sunset, the mountains, the gorgeous valley. Right? Anything that is splendid, that is really striking. And Krishna says he's that splendor of the splendid. He's that sense of splendidness that we say, wow, this is amazing. I got to you too. And that I... that Krishna says that he's the strength of the strong. Of course, there's another place where Krishna says that he's the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. Here he just simply says that he is the strength, that he is the strength of the strong. So of course we have several different levels of strength. We have spiritual strength, we have mental strength, intellectual strength, we have emotional strength, we have physical strength. So spiritual strength, that is the strength, the conviction, the determination to do our sadhana every day, regardless of whether it's easy, whether it's hard, whether we're in a nice situation, whether we're not in a nice situation. Spiritual strength is the strength to keep our faith and our conviction and our courage in difficult situations. Mental and intellectual strength, that's the strength to remember things, to learn things, to keep them there, to be able to bring back our focus when our mind is distracted. And physical strength, of course, has to do with health and vitality and ability. But all of those feelings of strength are Krishna. So the strength everyone in this room looks like is able to walk, our strength to walk, to sit, to think, that is Krishna. That's interesting that Krishna says that he's the gambling of cheats. And Prabhupada said there's many kind of cheaters, but gambling is the supreme form of cheating. So I think of all four of the regulative principles, gambling is the most difficult to understand. What does it mean to gamble? If we just say gambling means to take a risk, well, everything in life is a risk. Isn't that correct? You can't spend 1 minute in life without taking some sort of a risk. What do they say? That one out of three people will be involved in a serious car accident in their life. Well, you know, get into a car, that's a risk. To walk is a risk. You know, to get married is a risk. And I think to have children is actually one of the biggest risks. At least when you marry someone, you usually get to know them a little bit beforehand. With children, you don't get to know them beforehand at all. Just kind of, here they are. And you can divorce your spouse, but it's kind of hard to divorce your child. So that's a big risk. So I don't think that we would define gambling as risk-taking. And in fact, risk-taking is very much wanted in Krishna consciousness. We want people who are willing to preach in communist countries, preach in Muslim countries. We want people who are willing to take risks for Krishna. So gambling isn't about taking a risk. If we think about what is gambling exactly, that is considered the greatest cheating. So generally, when people are cheated, they don't know they're being cheated. Maybe they figure it out after some time. They think that they're getting something, and actually they're getting something else, right? Wouldn't we say that what it's like to be cheated? You think you're getting gold, and it's really just yellow aluminum. And it looks like it's something, and actually something else. But with gambling, it's quite interesting, because gambling is very open as to what it is. When you gamble, you already know in advance that all the other people you're gambling with want to take your money and give you nothing of value in return. Isn't that correct? Right? So if it's hidden cheating, I want to take your money or your time or your whatever and not give you anything worthwhile in return. But you don't know that. With gambling, you know that. So let's say 10 people all sit down to play whatever, poker. So everybody at the table knows that the other 9 people want to take their money without giving them something of equal value in terms of goods or services, right? The only thing they're giving you in return is the chance to take their money without giving them anything equal in return. So I wonder if that's why Krishna says of all cheating, gambling is the top. Because people go into it knowingly. They make an agreement. Okay, we're going to make an agreement that we all have the right to cheat each other. That's what cheating is. Cheating is I take something from you and I don't give you something equally valuable in return. Yes? Correct? Right? And just taking. So gambling is very extraordinary. That part. And if we do something where our mentality is like that, where our mentality is I want to get something without giving it in return. That's what I see as the definition of gambling. I mean, people say, if I invest in the stock market, is that gambling? Well, maybe, maybe not. If you're genuinely investing in a company, that's not gambling. But if you're playing the stock market and you're constantly trying to make easy money without doing any kind of a valid work. I mean, and I met a devotee who makes his money by playing the stock market. He does what's called day trading in currencies. And he was saying how, you know, in a week he can easily make $30,000 or, you know, $100,000 sometimes in a half an hour. So I was talking with another devotee about this, and I sang, how can we understand this is gambling? And the other devotee said, well, where is the money coming from? He's making this $30,000, he's making $100,000. He's not making this money because he's investing in a company, and the company has genuinely increased in value. He's making money by guessing how the currencies are going to change. You understand? And if he guesses right, he makes money, and that money is at the expense of someone else's pocket. The money is coming out of someone else's pocket, and that person is not getting anything in return. So it's the best cheating because people agree. They agree. They can't say later, well, I didn't know. Oh, this person cheated me. Oh, this person defrauded me. No, they didn't, because they told you right up front that they were going to take something from you. And if you really analyze gambling in this way, you can see why gambling is very harmful to Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada says that if you take one penny from somebody and you don't give them something good in return, then you have to come back and pay them again, either in this life or in another life. Otherwise, that's called what? Stealing, right? If I take something from you and I don't give you something of equal or greater value. So this concept is exactly the opposite to a Krishna conscious mentality. In a Krishna conscious mentality, I want to give people more than they're giving me. Right? I want to give people something of greater value. We go out and sell our books, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the value of the Bhagavad Gita? How can we even put a price on it, isn't it? Somebody gives you, you know, whatever, 10 euros, 30 euros for the Bhagavad Gita. You're giving them something far more valuable than what they're giving you. So the mood of the spiritual world is giving, and gambling is the mood of taking. But you may say, well then, why is it that Krishna would say that he's gambling? If gambling is the worst kind of cheating, and if gambling puts in a person the exact opposite mentality to that of bhakti, the mentality of taking and cheating rather than giving and helping. Why would Krishna identify himself with gambling? But he's identifying himself with the best of everything. And Prabhupada says here that Krishna is not one-sided. He's all-sided. This concept is something that's not understood by most of the world's religions. Most of the world's religions propound the concept of two gods, a god and a devil. And the devil is some sort of a competing god. The devil is responsible for all of the evil and all of the suffering, and God is responsible for all of the good. And somehow God is just can't do anything about this devil person. Maybe he'll do something about him in the future. Maybe, you know, maybe he'll come again someday and he'll get rid of the devil. But for now, he's sort of letting the devil run the show. So because they have a very one-sided view of God, therefore they have to propose a second God, a competitor God. But we say Krishna is the best at everything. Krishna is also the best at destruction. In the next chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in the 11th chapter, Krishna appears as a universal form, and he says, "Time I am, destroyer of the world." So Krishna also is death. He's not only the beginning, I mean, this is even in the Bible, I'm the Alpha and I'm the Omega. He's not only the beginning, he's also the end. He's not just birth, he's also death. He's not just creation, he's also at maintenance, he's also destruction. Of course, for Krishna, the destruction, the death, is also beautiful. Just like in this world, when there's death, the dead body becomes the ground for birth. Isn't it? The trees and the leaves and everything decay. And in their decay, new things grow, right? Isn't it? In places where there's no winter, the bugs become so numerous that there's so many more diseases in the tropical areas. The winter has the effect of killing diseases and killing bugs and killing parasites. So we were just reading an amazing quote where Prabhupada was saying that people should retire when they're 50 to make room for the young generation. And it was interesting. I remember having a talk with one of my sons and saying the purpose for death is so that we can experience all different desires in different bodies. And he said, well, another reason for death is so the old people can get out of the way and let the young people take responsibility. So even the destruction has a purpose, it has value, it has beauty, it has meaning. So therefore Krishna identifies himself with the best of everything, even the best of things that are destructive. And of course Krishna is the best cheater. You could say, well, if he's the best friend, how can he be the best cheater? Krishna is the best cheater for those who want to be cheated. If you want to go through life thinking that there's no purpose and there's no God, there's no meaning, then Krishna can give you Madhasmachiryanamapodhanamcha. He can give you forgetfulness and bewilderment and cheat you of the truth. So that you'll be able to, how can anybody look at the world and say there's no God and there's no meaning? But Krishna as the greatest cheater, if you say, my dear Lord, I want to be cheated. Yes, he can do that. He can cover the superior knowledge of the soul so that he is not seen, and the value and meaning and purpose and order of the universe is covered from us. So these verses are very wonderful ways in which we can be conscious of Krishna at every moment. When I came to the Krishna consciousness movement, part of what I was looking for was a process where I could be absorbed in God 24 hours a day. So there's many systems of religion that say, okay, you have this time in the morning or in the evening or once a week or at a holiday when you become absorbed in God. And the rest of the time, you're basically a materialist. But I didn't want that. I said I wanted something where I could be in transcendental consciousness constantly. And especially these verses from the 7th, 9th, 10th, and 15th chapters of Bhagavad Gita. where we can realize Krishna in everything. The splendor of the splendid. Victory, adventure, and strength. That is Krishna. Why don't we meditate on that for a minute and then we can take some questions. Can each of us become aware of our own strength? Can you become aware? Take your consciousness and become aware of your strength. We're all able to sit without falling over. We have some strength in our muscles. We have some sense of health and vitality. We have some strength in our senses. We have some mental strength, some intellectual strength, our spiritual strength. If we can get a sense of what that feels like, what does strength feel like? That sense of vitality, of aliveness, of ability. That is Krishna. If we can go back to the last time that we were victorious, maybe we were victorious in a project of our own. Maybe we were victorious in a competition. Access again that feeling. What was the feeling that you had in victory? That feeling of victory, that is Krishna. If we can go to a time that we were overwhelmed with something that was full of splendor, high mountains covered with snow, wide open horizon, river and ocean, a beautiful sky at sunrise or sunset, even some gorgeous creation of human beings, colors and lights, some spectacle where we go, ah, that is splendid. That sense of splendor, of grandeur, of vista, of color, that feeling, that is Krishna. So, questions, comments? Yes.
Sometimes when we are observing the nature and we are captivated by this sunrise, sunset, and also people generally are captivated by that, but their thinking is more like impersonal, you know, they cannot handle that it's like person behind of this, you know, so Krishna is describing who he is in the nature also, but how to connect it, how to inspire these people, this kind of people who are like nature, very walking on the hills, you know. So how to inspire them that that there is person behind it, of that. So,
you know. Give them a Bhagavad Gita.
Okay.
Give them a Bhagavad Gita. Anybody
else?
Yes.
How to increase this? How can we increase this?
This, well, therefore we call it sadhana bhakti. Sadhana means practice. So practice, what does it mean to practice? Practice usually involves some sort of repetition, correct? Yes? You're going to practice playing the guitar. You're going to practice skiing. If you're going to practice, involves some repetition. And involves some repetition, usually under some sort of expert guidance. And it involves a conscious, deliberate attention to what you are doing. It usually involves breaking up an action into smaller steps. and analyzing what you are doing. So this is called sadhana bhakti, which, if you think about it, perhaps is a little odd. Bhakti is devotional service. We're talking about love, love of God. So how do you practice love? It seems kind of contradictory, right? Love should just sort of flow. But even in our ordinary human relationships, love doesn't always just flow. Sometimes you have to do something deliberate and intentional to practice developing love or expressing love. If we didn't, there wouldn't be so many books and courses, etc., on relationships. Correct? Right? If it just flows. So in our relationship with Krishna, although it is natural, we've kind of lost it. We've kind of covered it. So we practice. A deliberate effort to practice. Whenever you achieve a victory, even if it's a small victory, you gave up smoking, or you gave up watching mindless, useless television shows, or you're eating healthy food, or whatever it is, or you're in a competition and you win, then you make a deliberate effort. Because we take that feeling of victory and we just enjoy it for ourselves. Yes? It's my victory. Woohoo! I'm victorious. It's mine. Krishna says, no, I'm the victor. So instead of trying to enjoy it for ourselves directly, enjoy that it's Krishna. Just like you could enjoy a friend's victory, couldn't you? Yes? Don't we enjoy the victory of our friends? How many billions and billions of euros and dollars and pounds are spent on enjoying others' victories? Oh my God. Think about all the sporting events in the world that people go to and watch. We won! You didn't win. You're sitting in your chair. You didn't do anything. I mean, you won. What did you have to do with it? Nothing. But you're enjoying their victory. Why can't we enjoy Krishna's victory? If so many millions of people can enjoy the victory of a team that really has nothing whatsoever to do with them, why can't we enjoy the Krishna's victory? We already know how to do that. We already know how to enjoy someone else's victory as if it's our own. When we apparently have victory that is our own, relish the fact that Krishna is the victory. That enjoyment is unlimited. When we try to enjoy the victory as our victory, that is very limited and then it's over. When we enjoy the victory as Krishna's victory, that is unlimited and it continues. But that takes an effort. Oh, yeah, Krishna says I'm victory. Krishna says I'm adventure. You have to remember, you have to make an effort. Do you have to remember and make a deliberate effort forever? No. Sadhana bhakti becomes eventually it revives our natural state. Just like most of us in this room can walk very well. Now, can all of you look at this young man here who you've been all trying not to look at all this time, but I'd like you to look at him for a moment. See how he's walking? Is he very good at it? Is he very good at it? Hey, look at even the... Yeah, he keeps falling down. And if you can look at the way he walks, it's quite awkward. You understand? In English, we call them toddlers because they don't quite walk. They kind of walk from their hips, right? They have this sort of strange walk. And you notice when children like that are walking, they're giving a lot of attention to the walking process. You follow what I'm saying? So if he were to walk over here, he'd have to give at least 50% of his mental effort to how he's walking. Does everybody understand that? Yes? Do any of you have to do that? Do any of you have to give all that much attention? There he goes again. Look at this. You see how he has to work quite a bit just to stay balanced. Do you see that? See? Okay, we all did that at one point. We don't have to do that anymore. So it's just like that with bhakti. It's exactly like that with bhakti. Walking is natural, but when you're first reviving bhakti, you have to put some effort into it, and you have to practice, and you have to give it a lot of your attention. You get to a point where you just do it, because it's who we are. Just like we've all gotten to the point that we just walk. We're not paying any conscious attention to how we're moving our muscles and bones, etc. We're just doing it. But at that age, we had to give it a lot of attention. So the way we do this with bhakti is we put some deliberate mental effort into remembering that Krishna is the victory, Krishna is the adventure, Krishna is our strength. As we do that on a regular basis, because it is our natural consciousness to be like that, eventually, just like it's our natural ability, walking is natural. So in the same way, eventually it kicks in and becomes more and more and more and more and more automatic until it's just who and what we are. Is that okay? Anybody else? Yes.
Člověk o něco snaží, dá tomu nějaký úsilí, pak ho někdo pochválí, tak má nějakou radost. Jako já si nemyslím, že znamenám, co Nataží říká, myslím si, že nějaký malý prostor jako pro nás by tam mohl zůstat, že by to mohlo být zdravý. Jako pro to naše já, taky, že něco jsem dělal, můžu si uvědomovat, Krišna mi pomáhal, ale to úsilí prostě jsem dělal já, i to tělo. Tak potom, jestli není na místě nějaký malý uznání, aspoň pro nás.
So, he's saying that when we are successful and we have some victory, so you explain that all credit should be like, this is Krishna's victory, it is his credit. But he says that at least a little bit of that should be like for us also, because it was our endeavor, our body, and...
Don't worry, you get to eat the prasadam.
The boy,
Krishna's very kind. Give him all of the food, and he gives it all back, and it tastes better. You don't have to worry that you have to put some aside for yourself before you make the offering.